Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. U.S. Customs and Border Protection has been dispatched to 25 American cities this year. Beginning in June, they were deployed to Los Angeles, in August to Washington, D.C. In September, they showed up in Portland, Oregon, and then in October, they descended on Chicago and Memphis. There were other cities, too, but we didn't really understand the impact of these deployments until Border Patrol arrived here in November. In just under a week, around 400 people living and working in Charlotte had been rounded up and detained, many violently. More than a few were American citizens or had documentation allowing them to be in the country legally. Framed by the Trump administration as necessary to crack down on crime and illegal immigration, all of the cities targeted were blue. Here in Charlotte, they dubbed it Operation Charlotte's Web, and it spread fear through the Hispanic community, resulting in the disruption of businesses and services, and it angered many native-born Americans because of the use of profiling and the lack of warrants presented, which would allow for legal detention. Lee Altman, the vice chair of the Mecklenburg County Commission, said that to her, it was plain these actions were designed to sow terror.
They were designed to intimidate, and I challenge the president, and I challenge federal law enforcement that was in leadership and directed these events to show us the warrant signed by a judge, to show us the probable cause that justified the arrest, or to show us the previous criminal conviction that justified each and every one of the 200 seizures that took place. I don't think you can, but I put the gauntlet down. And show us where this was legitimate.
Several weeks have passed since that moment, and still we know very little about the information Lee Altman reasonably requested, nor do we know much about the disposition of those who were apprehended. Local officials have said that Border Patrol has moved on, but the Department of Homeland Security claims that is not the case, that operations are ongoing. So today, we look at how this operation has affected our Hispanic community, the city as a whole, the legal avenues those impacted might have, how local leaders have reacted and planned to react, and more. We're joined by Julian Berger, who has been reporting on this for WFAE News as our race and equity reporter, and Christy Gronke is with us. She's an attorney for the ACLU of North Carolina. We'll hear from them a little bit later on. I want to begin with Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden. Welcome back, Sheriff. Nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Before Thanksgiving, you and CMPD both said that Border Patrol had concluded their operations here. And within hours of that statement, the Department of Homeland Security said that wasn't the case, that operations were ongoing. Are they ongoing? What do you know about that this morning, right now?
Well, I think it's the word that I use is a word salad. They're going to confuse us with words and bring fear. And I was told by an ICE official that they were leaving that Thursday. Now, when we talk about if they're still here, they well could be in the office, administrative office, working. So technically, by using that word that they are still here, sitting in an office, filing papers and doing paperwork, they could be. But there are not enforcement actions here.
Do we have a number on any actions that have taken place since just before Thanksgiving or just before they announced that, though, you announced that they were leaving? Do we know how many people have been apprehended since then?
Unofficially, because we still don't have any communication with them. Very little, very limited, uncooperative. So they are dubbing it to be someplace between the numbers of 300 to 370. And I've even heard it in other cities when they are announcing it. It is actually 400. We were never giving an exact number.
So there have been politicians who have tried to say that it was necessary to deploy Border Patrol to Charlotte because you, Sheriff McFadden, had not been cooperating with ICE. So let's clear that up. Can you say, without reservation, that you have been working with ICE so that accusation is outmoded?
That is a false accusation. North Carolina General Statute 162.62 mandates us by law to work with ICE to a cooperation. Now, when we go outside of the scope of the law, which ICE wants me to do without, you know, without having paper signed by a judge, I'm not going to do that. But we have been cooperating with ICE. I even sent a letter to ICE on October 1st, which they came to my office and we had a conversation of cooperation.
And even though they want you to cooperate with ICE, to my understanding, neither your department nor CMPD were asked to be part of any operations conducted by Border Protection. Is that correct?
That is correct. We had no ask, no even, we're going to be here. This is who we are. We can't even determine if they were ICE agents. It's just people in camouflage with guns.
You and others in local law enforcement have said that the activities that the federal government has been undertaking with regard to ICE and portraying as making our community safer have been doing the opposite. How would you characterize what has been taking place with Border Protection?
Completely opposite. Fear, anxiety, uncertainty, all of that comes into play. It wasn't making anything safer. It made it worse. And they claimed that they were getting the worst first. Absolutely not. They showed us nothing about the worst first.
You've often said that ICE raids in our communities, I'll move on from that. Lee Altman, as you heard in that clip that I played a minute ago, says that Border Patrol is here to instill fear and terror. Is that an exaggeration? What's your take on that?
Well, I don't think that is an exaggeration. If you can look at all the videos that we have seen, people who are just citizens or residents having their windows burst out, being dragged on the ground, people being chased, it brought fear. And this is the fear that was televised on social media. So it even brought more fear. We lived in a week long of a movie of horror.
You know, you've been in law enforcement most of your life, your professional life. When you look at how the federal government is conducting these raids, and when you look at the laws that surround their ability to conduct these raids, how do you feel about that as a professional?
Well, I don't feel great about it as a professional because we never had a conversation. ICE has two federal laws that they could utilize. They did not. If you want to make your city safe and work within the law, you know, we have hundreds of warrants, unserved warrants inside the Mecklenburg County Detention Center or the courthouse that we could serve. So we could do a joint operation if to make our city safe. But this was beyond anything I have ever seen in my four decades of law enforcement ever.
How many of those people who were apprehended and then later detained have been charged with anything or have been released? Do we know that?
Well, we don't have that number, and I don't think that we can say they have been charged with anything. We have to understand that the guidelines that they were operating under were the civil guidelines. So they did not have warrants. They're just having a conversation with intimidation. And when the person pulls out their ID and they determine that he is from another country, they simply just take him into their custody at that moment.
Talk to me about how these apprehensions. I'm not sure what the vocabulary is here, but talk about how these are being conducted here in Charlotte, how they were conducted around the country, as we witnessed on television. In terms of the perspective of law enforcement, it seemed to the naked eye that these masked agents, were simply corralling people who were walking down the street, shopping in stores, sitting in their cars, and then being whisked away. There were no warrants presented. There was no identification in many cases on the part of the agents presented. Could your department conduct operations in that fashion?
No, we could not. And the citizens of our county would not allow us, and it would be outrage just as they were outraged. It's a way that you do things lawfully and in order. Yes, you can have a conversation with a person on the street and ask them for identification, and you can talk to them. But then when you dragging them away with no papers, that's confusing. They said that they had targets in Charlotte. Well, I think the targets with Central Avenue and South Boulevard and anywhere they would believe that undocumented immigrants would be working or playing. And so they just targeted these areas.
So since we know very little about the people that they picked up and detained, do we know how many of them actually have criminal records?
We have seen, I have seen it publicized that most of them didn't. And I think that's something that we should ask for, but I don't think that we will get it because that's the wordplay that they use and then sensationalize other parts of the media to take our attention away. But I don't think that we will ever know. They put out a joint report at the end of the year, and that is something that we can review, but nobody ever knows the number of apprehensions that they have done.
We're reviewing Border Patrol operations in recent weeks here in Charlotte with Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. CMPD tried to assure the Hispanic community during these operations that they were not helping Border Patrol and that if anyone in that community had concerns about crime, they could safely call 911 and get help without putting them in harm's way in terms of exposing them to Border Patrol. Do police, does your department not ask a person's status when you respond to a call?
No, we do not. The only time that we ask a person's status, and we ask every person's status when they're entering the Mecklenburg County Detention Center, we have three questions at the beginning of the questionnaire that we ask them. Citizenship, where you're born, and are you a legal resident? That is done by every single person walking inside the detention center or arrest processing. But we don't commonly, we will not commonly go out and ask a person what your status is.
And you spent time, many years, with CMPD. Was it common practice, and is it common practice there when, for traffic stops, for instance, beyond asking for your driver's license and registration, to ask a person's citizenship status?
No, we do not. That is not a common practice by, I know my deputies, and that was not a common practice or a practice at all when I was with CMPD. That is not a practice that we used.
So you have said that you have complied with the letter of the law prior to and after the passage of the most recent bills the General Assembly put into place requiring, mandating cooperation of sheriffs around the state. According to the Constitution, we have Fourth Amendment rights protecting us against unlawful searches and seizures. We have Fifth Amendment rights, which guarantee us due process. And the word in that amendment uses the word person. It doesn't say citizen in that guarantee. It's persons are guaranteed that. In your opinion, does that mean that since those picking people up off the streets and dragging them out of cars and out of stores and away from their jobs without a warrant, that those people, those agents, were themselves breaking laws?
In my opinion, it would be. In my opinion, and the way the Constitution is written, in my opinion, it would be.
Some of those picked up and detained by Border Patrol were indeed criminals of some sort. Should those in the Hispanic community or the community at large feel safer today, even though they may not feel safe? Should they feel safer today because of these activities?
I don't think they will feel safer because it wasn't explained to them what the operation was actually going to do and what did it actually occur. I believe if you talk to the Hispanic Latino community, they will tell you also, they do not want criminals in their communities. They do not want criminals in their communities.
Sheriff Gary McFadden, Mecklenburg County Sheriff, joined us for the first part of the program. When we come back from the break, we'll get a little lowdown on how the community has reacted to this from our race and equity reporter at WFAE, Julian Berger. And we'll also be joined by an attorney for the ACLU of North Carolina to talk about the legal aspects of all of this. Sheriff, thank you for joining us. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcltregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Border Patrol being in Charlotte over the last month or so. Well, last month, and what they're up to now and how that has impacted Charlotte at large and the Hispanic community in particular. Julian Berger joins us now. He's WFAE's race and equity reporter. He's here along with Christy Grunke, an attorney for the ACLU of North Carolina. Julian, we know that while Border Patrol operations were in full swing, many Hispanic-owned businesses, many that catered to that community, simply shut their doors so that both their employees and their customers would be safe and would not put themselves in jeopardy. We know that in the early days of this operation, nearly 30,000 CMS students didn't go to school, and many of them, we would assume, are members of that community. They didn't want to run into Border Patrol on the way to or from school. How do things stand in the Hispanic community this morning? Have things begun to return to something approaching normal?
Yes, there's been a sense of returning to normal little by little. We don't have numbers on, like you mentioned, on the students that have gone back to school, but there's been more students going to school, more parents and adults going back to work. Businesses have been opening back up little by little, especially like Sheriff McFadden mentioned on that South Boulevard corridor and in East Charlotte, where those are two very heavy immigrant populations in our city. So slowly, we've been seeing kind of life returning back to normal for the Latino community.
And I asked the sheriff about this, and I guess nobody in law enforcement locally really knows the answer, but anecdotally, do you know if there have been any significant numbers of apprehensions since the sheriff and department and CMPD announced that Border Patrol had concluded operations, because Border Patrol says they're ongoing?
Yeah, we have no idea to that. I email the Department of Homeland Security every single morning asking for an update to these numbers. And it was so funny because last week they were like, we'll send you new numbers when we have them, kind of alluding to stop emailing us asking for new information, because they stopped the number at 400, but that hasn't increased since then.
You spoke to the executive director of Our Bridge, which is a nonprofit that suspended its after-school program after Border Protection showed up near its site back in mid-November, and they temporarily suspended those operations. It's a critically needed after-school program in normal times, but because parents were staying home, perhaps it wasn't as critically needed at the time they closed. Are they back in business?
Yes, they have come back. They had shifted their operations to giving out donations to families, making sure families were okay during those past couple of weeks. But now they have come back to normal.
And that the executive director of that organization told you that that the narrative that CBP is only looking for criminals is simply not true. Christy, we've heard that from others as well, that they're not picking up the worst of the worst. If some of those detained have no criminal records, if they were rounded up as they made their mandated and regularly scheduled check-ins at immigration, must they be eventually released? Would the law dictate that?
Yeah. Well, what's really important to understand here is that regardless of immigration status, people do have basic rights in the United States when they're here. And that includes the right not to be subjected to unreasonable searches and seizures, as was mentioned before. And so the Fourth Amendment does apply. There needs to be probable cause for an arrest or a prolonged detention that essentially amounts to an arrest. There needs to be at least reasonable suspicion to stop somebody and question them about their immigration status. And as of now, at least, you cannot base the stop of a person for immigration enforcement purposes solely on race. And I think, unfortunately, that is what we've heard about in Charlotte that happened in mid-November, that people were being stopped because they were in an immigrant neighborhood, because of the color of their skin or the language that they spoke or the accent that they had.
So does that place the government itself in legal jeopardy?
Certainly. People's rights were violated. We believe that not only did Border Patrol violate constitutional rights, but the own, their own regulations and their own requirements and the laws governing their activities, which require them, for example, to have warrants or to arrest only with probable cause.
But we saw what happened in the first Trump administration with the separation of parents and children. We saw what happened with the deportation of individuals rounded up and then sent to a prison in Central America. I don't know what the disposition of those individuals is to this day. There doesn't seem to be any punishment for that. Anybody going after the administration for that? Am I wrong about that?
You do see people standing up for their rights, and I think that has manifested in a couple ways. Parents whose children were separated from them, those children did take legal action to try to, first of all, publicize what had happened, but also to seek remuneration from the government. So I disagree that people have not taken legal action or that legal action has not been taken, but we do have a massive accountability problem right now with what the federal government and federal law enforcement is able to do. And we should all be worried when federal law enforcement believes that it can rove around our cities, break federal law, break state law with impunity. And often when people do seek redress through the courts, court orders, damages, that sort of thing, it isn't sufficient to correct and to remediate the harm.
I want to mention that we reached out to the Department of Homeland Security, to Governor Josh Stein, to U.S. Senator Tom Tillis, to Mayor Vi Lyles to be on this program today and for past programs that we've done recently on this topic. All either did not respond, declined, or were simply unavailable due to their personal schedules to be with us. So, Julian, how would you, as a reporter, and how would people in the community that you cover characterize local leaders' response in terms of their availability to speak to constituents through the media or otherwise and address their concerns about this?
Yeah, what I've been hearing is there's been a lot of statements going out from the mayor, from other elected leaders here in our community. The Latino community, the immigrant community is saying that's not enough. They would have wanted to see elected officials out on the streets at businesses that were shuttered at, you know, in communities on Central Avenues, South Boulevard. They wanted to see elected leaders more present. And I also think, too, a little bit more action from city council, the county commissioners, in terms of practical solutions, in terms of ways to kind of push back a little bit against CBP coming into our community instead of just releasing statements, like I said.
Let's get into some of the legalities, Christy, of how the government has been operating. First of all, is there a difference in, I don't know, you're not in Charlotte, you're in Durham, but is there a difference in how ICE has been conducting raids here and elsewhere and what we've witnessed with Border Patrol here and elsewhere?
Well, it is not normal for Border Patrol to be conducting roving patrols within inland cities. You know, generally, Border Patrol, their presence is concentrated and their authority is usually concentrated around a reasonable distance from a U.S. boundary.
I think it's 100. I think it's 100 miles.
Yes, it's been interpreted to be 100 miles. Yes,
but it's also been interpreted, I understand, to be within 100 miles of ports of entry, of which Charlotte Douglas International Airport would be.
That is the position CBP is taking. Now, there is some debate about whether that's correct or whether boundary has to be construed as a land boundary or a coastline. But either way, it is important to know that simply because they may be operating within that border area that they're claiming they have a right to operate in, that the Fourth Amendment still applies, that due process still applies. So it isn't that constitutional rights are suspended completely within that border area. What it does is it does authorize them, for example, to board vessels, trains, public vehicles, buses, that sort of thing, to ask questions, to interrogate. But that doesn't mean that individuals lose their individual rights to be safe from searches and seizures without probable cause.
And do we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that people who are in the country illegally, in that they did not come through channels, do we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that the Constitution guarantees them the same protections that it guarantees citizens.
We do, because when the framers of the Constitution and the amendments wanted to specify citizens, they did. And notably, the Fifth Amendment, the Fourth Amendment talk about people, persons. And there is very well established precedent in the context of the Fifth and 14th Amendment that the persons referred to in those laws absolutely, and the Fourth Amendment as well, absolutely include undocumented immigrants.
So ICE's mission centers on criminal investigations, on immigration enforcement, and the removal inside the U.S. of people who should not be here. Border Patrol is specifically, as I understand it, tasked with preventing illegal entry and intercepting people who cross the border, among other things. From what you understand, were they, Border Patrol, dispatched to Charlotte and other cities simply because ICE did not have the personnel to accomplish the Trump administration's goal of getting people out? It was an enormous goal, an enormous number of people.
Certainly, the Trump administration has very unrealistically said that it is going to deport millions and millions of undocumented people in a very short period of time. But I think what you're seeing here is not actually a well thought out strategic law enforcement action. That absolutely what we've seen here is roving patrols that are terrorizing immigrant communities, Latine communities. Many of those individuals are lawfully present, are U.S. citizens, have no criminal record, or the most minor traffic violations at most. So absolutely, it is not a targeted and strategic show of force.
Julian.
Yeah, I think what was surprising to me seeing this operation here in Charlotte was the speed and efficiency that they ran at. I mean, it was like ghost. They would come in, swoop as many people as they could, and then go away. I would get reports, you know, people texting me being like, oh, CBP is at this street, you know, go see if you can find them. And when I would get there, they'd be gone. So it was like they were moving quickly, trying to get as many people as they could. And compared to ICE, I mean, ICE typically would move at a slower pace compared to CBP.
I was going to ask you how the community is. Do they see a distinction between how ICE has operated and the result of their operation versus Border Patrol?
Yes, definitely. I think the speed and they were everywhere. I mean, they're especially that first weekend that they were in Charlotte, they were concentrated in Central Avenue, in South Boulevard. So if you did live in those areas, you definitely saw them. And like I said, how they were trying to pick as many people as they could.
Christy.
Yeah, I think also to add to that, we're hearing about tactics that, frankly, I have not heard about before in terms of just mass roving immigration enforcement, including destruction of property. We all saw the video of Mr. Aceituno's window being broken, trampling on private property, homeowners finding ICE agents in their yard, CBP agents in their yard. Extremely aggressive and violent and unnecessary use of force.
I want to talk about all of those things one by one. You told Christy, WFAE's Nick Delacanal, that the ACLU of North Carolina is alleging Border Patrol agents violated North Carolina law. They violated the state's face mask ban, which prohibits people from concealing their identity with masks or hoods on public property. Will the ACLU take action on that violation?
Well, that is a criminal law. So it is largely up to individual prosecutors to decide what they'll do with that. I will tell you that my office is looking into all options to address the many, many civil rights violations that occurred in Charlotte.
But that's a state law, and these are federal operations. Sure. Can federal operators ignore state laws? Does federal law trump state law?
Not in all instances. And in fact, in many instances, federal law and state law coexist and federal agents are bound by state law. For example, drunk driving. Just because you're a federal agent doesn't mean you're exempt from DUI laws in a state. That's just one example. But there are many state laws that do apply to federal agents and would apply here.
And I want to be really clear about this because people have very different views about what's been going on here and around the country. The ACLU has raised alarms about racial profiling and warrantless entries and potential violations of Miranda rights and access to counsel, all of which I want to get to over the course of this hour. But first, does the government have a right to stop and question someone and or ask for proof of citizenship just for walking down a street or coming out of a store or sitting in their car in a parking lot?
No, absolutely not. The Constitution requires that for a law enforcement officer to stop and interrogate someone that they have reasonable suspicion that a crime is being committed, or in the case of immigration enforcement, that somebody is unlawfully present. Somebody simply walking down the street in an immigrant community, somebody who appears to be Latine or from a different country, somebody who is speaking Spanish, that's not enough.
Christy Gronke is an attorney with the ACLU of North Carolina with us this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. You mentioned a second ago, Christy, that famous moment that was caught on camera and went viral. It was on national networks everywhere, of the man approached by Border Patrol while sitting in his truck. They broke his window. They pulled him out of the vehicle. They threw him to the ground. He told a reporter and he told those agents that other members of Border Patrol had already spoken to him. He had already proven his citizenship in the United States. They let him go, and then he was approached within 5 minutes in his truck by other agents. They told him to open his truck window, and when he did not comply, they broke the window, entered the car, pulled him out, threw him to the ground. If you are in a car and a law enforcement official like Border Patrol, not CMPD, is there a difference? We can talk about that. And they approach you in that manner. What is your obligation? Are you obliged to roll down the window or get out of the car?
Well, again, they have to have reasonable suspicion to stop you in your car and to question you or, ask to search your vehicle. Generally, if they're going to search your vehicle, especially if it's a prolonged search, probable cause is required, but they need to have at least reasonable suspicion to stop you. In that case, Mr. Aceituno, the man who was a victim of that activity, that CBP activity, showed them proof of his citizenship, had already given them his real ID, and yet they proceeded with no reasonable suspicion to think that he was unlawfully present or committing any crime to go after him and to destroy his property. So, I mean, there's a question about safety. I would never encourage somebody to resist law enforcement because very often it ends in injury and sometimes even death. But I do have very serious concerns that in that case, rights were violated.
Hmm. So what do you, I have 15 seconds. What, as an attorney, are you advising people to do if this happens to them?
I advise them to, follow the commands of law enforcement to remain silent no matter what. However, you do not give up your right to remain silent.
We have to take a break. We're coming back with more in a moment. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Julian Berger, WFAE News race and equity reporter, and Christy Gronke, an attorney with the ACLU of North Carolina. We were talking about a little while ago about the individual who was hauled out of his car. The Border Patrol agents smashed his window, and it turns out he had already proven to other agents that he was an American citizen. Does he now have a legal case against Border Patrol or the federal government for property damage, for physical harm, for harassment, for a violation of his constitutional rights?
Yeah, I absolutely believe so, that based on what we've seen and what we've heard about that situation, absolutely. And I just want to add, you had asked me about advice for people who are in that situation. To be clear, the reason why I would advise at least physically complying with officers' commands is to avoid injury to yourself and your property, not because what they did was lawful. Again, you can follow law enforcement commands, getting out of your vehicle to avoid injury, but remain silent. That is absolutely your right to remain silent. And it's important to really for folks to exercise that right without if they haven't had an opportunity to
But
consult with
the
counsel.
problem here is that if you are stopped by CMPD or any police department in the
Sure.
country for a moving up violation or because they want to talk to you
Sure.
and you comply with them, you know what's going to happen. They're either going to release you or they're going to take you to jail. And when you're in jail, you have access to counsel, you have access to family, etc. These people haul you off to God knows where with no access to any of that. Is that so? In light of that activity and the way they're handling this, is it wise to comply?
Well, I think it depends what you mean by comply. Again, physically resisting can result in harm to you, injury, perhaps even criminal charges, depending on the resistance. If you're violently resisting or you're using hands, very often too, we see people being charged with, frankly, trumped up federal crimes for resisting officers. There are ways to assert your rights in that situation. Again, you have a right to remain silent, but if you have proof of citizenship or lawful status, you can show that to them. You can say, look at this. I am here lawfully. I don't want to answer any more of your questions. I want to speak to an attorney. And so that is what I would advise people to do, not to completely comply and answer questions and talk and talk and talk, but to understand that they do have rights and that they can insert them confidently in that moment.
You mentioned private property, and I want to get into that now too. There was another incident that ended up on social media. Roll the cut of agents approaching landscapers on private property as these landscapers were decorating Christmas trees. So the homeowner was evidently on her porch drinking coffee as this unfolded, and she recorded the interaction with
Good
these
morning.
men.
Señor. Señor.
Now, they didn't respond to her, but they did continue to interact with the men until they suddenly retreated back into their SUV.
Get the hell out of my yard, you.
That was the homeowner. At least as far as we can tell from the recording, she didn't ask them to leave. We didn't hear that on the recording. They seemed to leave on their own, but did she have a right to ask them to leave? Can private
Yes.
property owners, whether residential or commercial, refuse to allow Border Patrol or other federal officials who do not present warrants on their property? Can you tell them to go away?
They can. And if ICE has a judicial warrant, if you're a private homeowner, if ICE has a judicial warrant, that would be an exception where you would need to allow them access to your property if they have a warrant that is signed by a judge. But in the case of somebody who's just going, CBP officers who are just roving around the neighborhood who don't have any warrants signed by a judge, no, you do not have to allow them on your property. You can instruct them to leave. And frankly, it sounded like she did tell them to get off her property. And once that's done, they need to leave. Or if she's told them they're not welcome there, they need to leave.
In another, perhaps more high-profile incident, Myers Park Country Club reported that Border Patrol agents entered the club's grounds without a warrant, without permission. They briefly detained one of the club's employees, who they later released. Again, can they do that?
Well, I don't have all the facts of that in front of me, but generally speaking, entering a business, particularly the non-public parts of a business, and with a country club, I think there's a really good argument that the entirety of it is not open to the public because it's a membership-only organization. Entering without a judicial warrant, without the consent of the owners, questioning somebody who they don't have reasonable suspicion to stop and question, that would be illegal.
WFAE reported at the time that the club was consulting with legal counsel to determine what they can do to ensure the club's privacy and security. What can they do, in your legal opinion?
Well, I think the most important thing is to know your rights. Many businesses have actually gone to the stage of posting signs saying CBP, ICE are not welcome here. If you enter our property, you need to have a judicial warrant if you're entering our property for investigative purposes. So that is one thing they can do, and they can certainly ask to see a judicial warrant. If it's not present, tell them that they are not allowed to enter. So that's something that business owners can do.
So there is a distinction. Had they presented the homeowner in the case that we just heard a few seconds ago with a warrant, had they presented management or the receptionist, whomever at Myers Park Country Club, a warrant, would their activities been different in terms of the legality of them?
It depends on the scope of the warrant. I also want to specify that it needs to be a warrant signed by a judge, not just an administrative warrant, for them to be able to enter against the wishes of the private property owner. So in that case, if they did have a warrant signed by a judge, a judicial warrant, it would depend on the scope of the warrant. One of the reasons having a warrant is important is it limits the authority of law enforcement, even where there is probable cause to make a search or to look for somebody. It limits the scope of that search so that our privacy is not unduly trampled upon. And unfortunately, we saw that there's just no judicial warrants in most of these cases.
In the course of these operations here and in other cities that we've witnessed on television, they don't seem to have any warrants. Maybe they do, but we've never seen them, and I don't think they've been presented to the people involved in being approached and apprehended. Is that because it's just too difficult and too time-consuming to get warrants for operations like this? And when you get a warrant, does it have to be aimed at a specific person, or can it be a blanket warrant for a class of people?
No, it can't be a class-wide warrant. It really has to be focused on a particular place in search of physical evidence or a particular person. And they have to have probable cause to back that up.
So does
And
that
it
make
has to be.
these operations illegal on the face of them? Period. The way they're being conducted, they simply are outside the law.
In many cases, yes. I think there's a widespread practice we've seen in other cities, and certainly what we saw here in North Carolina, of warrantless arrests, arrests without probable cause, which are illegal under the Constitution and under the laws and regulations that govern CBP activity.
So growing up, we were all told two wrongs don't make a right. But if you are law enforcement and in an administration that has campaigned on and won an election based in part on ridding the country of people who are not here through legal channels, and you embark on a program like this, even though you're operating outside the jurisdiction of the law, so are the people involved in being apprehended in some cases. They came across the border without papers.
Well, we have to hold law enforcement to the standard of following the laws of the country. If they're going to enforce the laws of the country, they must follow those laws. So we absolutely demand accountability and transparency from law enforcement that we cannot necessarily expect of individual private citizens. Or if we do expect it, it is absolutely a case of two wrongs don't make a right.
Julian.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing here was the racial profiling. I mean, I had a lot of Latino and other immigrant citizens the week or two that CBP was in Charlotte that they had their passports. Even I, a Puerto Rican US citizen, was in this city carrying my passport around because of the racial profiling that was happening in our city.
Candidate Trump announced his intention to deport hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants. And there are many in the country who agreed with that approach. That's partly why he is in the White House. But the approach being taken, as the previous administration did with the separation of children from their parents, seems to be conducting these operations with cruelty as a feature. And one that will give those who might want to come here without going through channels pause, make them think twice before they do it. That's clearly what's the message being sent. Is there a saner, safer, kinder, but equally effective way to engage in this process, Christy?
Well, One of the first things I want to highlight is that Congress has chosen, in most cases, mere undocumented presence is not a crime. And you were talking previously about, the crimes or the criminal activity of people who are here unlawfully or the lawlessness of that. That is, in most cases, a civil offense and not a criminal offense. So Congress has already made choices that certain types of immigration actions are not necessarily criminal. So I think you're looking at an extremely outsized reaction to what is essentially a civil enforcement issue. That is, for Congress to determine then what sort of appropriate limitations are they going to place on immigration. How are they going to make sure that people can be who have a claim to lawful status can remain and try to obtain lawful status? Many people have family members who are U.S. citizens or have some lawful status. And there are many different forms of immigration relief. It's a very complex system that Congress has created. So to go around and say, well, we just have all these undocumented people and we just have to get rid of them is a vast oversimplification of our immigration system. It's also contrary to the way our economy works. When you look at the major industries here in North Carolina, agriculture, construction, all those are heavily dependent on immigrant labor. And so I think before we sort of talk about, what would an immigration policy look like or an immigration enforcement policy look like, we have to look at what is actually happening in society, the reality of families, the reality of children who are here, whose parents are maybe immigrants, they are US citizens. We have to look at all those complexities in addition to the complex scheme that Congress has created.
But
We're
do
very
they?
far from doing
They
that.
broke the law. So do we have to consider those things?
Well, we do, because even people who break the law have rights. And absolutely the right to due process, the right to be heard. You may be in the country, have come here or be unlawfully present, but you may in fact have an ability to obtain a lawful immigration status. Also, you have a right to due process to be heard before you're just deported. And there are very deep and concerning questions about people just being detained by immigration authorities, effectively being disappeared. They're not able to contact counsel. They're being put away in detention centers, but then being moved so that they can't even contact family or counsel. And then they're being sent away sometimes to countries that they are not even from. So there are some grave wrong things wrong with this enforcement
Julian, many
system.
members of the Hispanic community voted for Donald Trump, and they voted for them in part because they came here legally and they want others to come here legally, and they resent the fact that I don't want to put words in their mouths, but they resent the fact that others are here that who didn't go through the jump through the hoops that they had to contend with. Have you talked to any Hispanic Trump voters about their reaction to these operations? Have they changed their minds in any way about how they voted?
Yeah, a lot of them are regretting how they voted. I've spoken to a lot of Latinos, especially here in Charlotte, that have voted for Trump. And even being friends with them on Facebook and social media, when this operation was happening, they were posting information for immigrants, know your rights, where to find food donations, if they needed help, being driven to the doctors, taking their kids to school. These were Latinos that had voted for Trump that were now trying to help the immigrant community during this time.
We're talking about what happened with ICE and Border Patrol, mostly Border Patrol, in the last several weeks here in Charlotte on WFAE. Have the individuals who have been apprehended, Julian, to the best of your knowledge, been in contact with their families? Have they been able to contact representation, legal representation?
What I've heard from, yes, we're seeing that people that were apprehended in this Charlotte operation have been finally been able to get in contact with lawyers, with families. However, that did take a few days.
There are also things called Miranda rights, which you've alluded to, Christy. For those who don't watch Law and Order, remind us of what those rights are.
Sure. These are very basic rights to that when you are under arrest, that a law enforcement officer who is performing the arrest has to advise you of certain basic rights you have. The right to an attorney if you're being charged with a crime and you can't afford an attorney, the right to remain silent. These are absolutely key rights that we have and that it's critically important that people receive before they talk to law enforcement
And
or
to be
discipline or
clear,
talk to them.
they apply to non-citizens.
They do, yes.
Okay. Despite how un-American this approach that the administration has been taking here and around the country may appear to a lot of people, there are still people who agree with the approach. Tell me why they shouldn't. Tell me why they should be concerned that the administration, they as American citizens, native born or otherwise, should be concerned that the administration is taking this approach. Why does it matter?
Well, I think there's absolutely a myth that we're seeing being deconstructed in real time, that only undocumented immigrants are being impacted by these immigration activities. And even if you think, well, there's people here unlawfully, they should leave, you have to recognize, again, that people have family ties to U.S. citizens, that people have minor children, that people may have a legitimate claim to remain here, that people are who may be undocumented are an incredibly important part of our economy and our society. They're taking care of your elderly grandmother. They're picking strawberries or potatoes or whatever it is. They are fueling, in many cases, entire industries. And so we have to be realistic.
I have about 30 seconds left. I played a clip at the very beginning of the program of Commissioner Lee Altman saying she wanted a response from the federal government about certain things, and the governor has said he wanted a response. Is the federal government under any obligation to respond to local officials in their requests for information?
Well, there are certainly rights under the Freedom of Information Act to obtain certain information from government officials, but that you shouldn't have to submit a FOIA request to get this information.
And again, I want to stress that we reached out to the Department of Homeland Security, the governor, U.S. Senator Tom Tillis, Mayor Viall Lyles to be on this program today and for past programs. And the only people who have ever come on are Gary McFadden, the sheriff, and County Commissioner Susan Rodriguez McDowell. I want to thank Christy Gronke with the ACLU and Julian Berger. Thanks.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.